Podcasts of this and other shows are now available on supertalk1270.com.
Things that a physicist wants to chat about. At the control panel, producer extraordinaire Jim Walsh.
So
Jim,
I'm sitting here adjusting the microphone, then the button comes off of my hand.
I thought it was pretty hilarious.
I'm afraid to go to the bathroom now. Rodney Dangerfield joke. I respect it all.
Nobody can say we don't have fun on this show, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, of course, we have to mention that we are now part of the tech podcast world, which Jim, of course, loves. That's right. We are now on the Roku, Google TV, Apple TV, so much more.
A laurel and hearty round of applause.
Thank you very much. Yeah. That would be one hand clapping, right?
Very zen.
Yes. So, Jim, what do you do with your old electronics?
They sit around the house and take up space.
Okay. So you really haven't had any type of strategy in mind as far as what to do with them?
No, I am the most untechnical human being on the face of the planet. I do have my old laptop, which I keep thinking I might kind of reconnoiter and turn into, maybe a backup for my my PC, which is ridiculous because, like I say, I am so untechnical. You know, I'm the guy who goes to the he takes his car to the garage, and I can't even explain to the guy what's wrong with the car.
the thing there, the doohickey, and the thing of a bob makes a funny noise.
Well, that's why I like to talk to you about this, because, you know, a lot of people really don't know what to do with their old electronics.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of get in the same I'm kind of the same way, too, I guess. I'll get them to stack up in a closet someplace or whatever, and then, you know, sooner or later, you have to deal with this situation, though.
Right.
You know, got old cell phones, old computers. You know, what in the world is a person supposed to do with them? And you really just don't want to throw them away.
I knew an engineer. Several years ago, somebody gave me a couple of old PCs.
Okay.
And I didn't know what to do with them. So after they sat in the bedroom for a while and took up space, I just gave them away. I found a guy who was a real tinkerer.
Sure.
And I gave them to him, and he had a blast with it. It was like Christmas Day for him.
Yep. And there's, you know, there are people around like that, and you certainly can find things, you know, there's programs like Computers for Kids, which is a local program in our area here that they actually will take the parts they can out of computers.
Yeah, community college, any place that has courses where they teach that kind of stuff, they'd be glad to take them off your hands.
Yes, yes. But sometimes they get to the point where they're so old that you just can't do anything with them anymore, and you just don't want to throw them away. So I guess at this time, I'm going to bring in physicist Terry Pilling. Terry is a former professor at NDSU and was the chief operations. Actually, he's the CEO of Pilling Energy in Mandan, North Dakota, and has a very, very extensive resume here, and I'm not going to get into everything. Just needless to say, he's very, very, I don't even know the word I want to use for him. We meet for breakfast this morning, and he's showing me robots, so we'll, and circuit boards. He brings a breadboard to breakfast, so I kind of appreciate
a breadboard.
A breadboard, you know, where you actually assemble electronics, you know.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. Sitting there tinkering. When I was, I lived in Indiana a few years ago, up near Purdue University.
Yes.
And that made me think every year they have a competition where you've got to come up with some kind of bizarre Rube Goldberg kind of invention that would do absolutely nothing useful, yet it would take the most steps from A to B in doing so. And I can imagine some of these guys sitting over breakfast at 3 in the morning, you know, got to get this ready for this morning. What does it do? Well, it just kind of pushes the golf ball into a cup, sort of.
Terry was showing me a machine that he built this morning that the only purpose in the world is to turn itself back off.
Whoa, that's like, is that not like a perpetual motion thingy there?
You turn it on, and the only thing it does is turn itself back off.
So. Okay.
Anyway, welcome to the show, Terry.
Thanks, Marlo.
All right, we're going to kind of get into some recycling ideas a little bit here, and I know we want to get into some of your favorite websites and stuff a little bit later in the show, but let's talk a little bit first about why it's not a good idea to throw an old electronic away.
Well, in electronics, they're made out of various types of exotic elements like Some of them have arsenic, silicon, and various other things like batteries have chemicals in them that can seep into groundwater and things like that. So if you just chuck them out in the garbage can and they end up in the landfill, they may seep into your groundwater.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm just looking at some of the things that can be in e-waste. Toxic components, barium, cadmium, lead, lithium, mercury, nickel, palladium, rhodium, and silver. Wow. And, I mean, every one of them, except for barium, birth defects, check mark behind right. it. Brain damage, every one of them has a check mark behind them. Heart, liver, lung, spleen damage, check mark behind every one of these. So you really don't want to be in there, you know, messing around. You know, I know some people who've played around with maybe melting these things down to get the silver or maybe a little bit of gold out of them or whatever. Not a good thing to do, is it?
I wouldn't.
Yep. And I know that, and of course, you don't want to be chucking these things away. But, you know, the United States, in pretty generally, their landfills handle this stuff pretty well. But I think the issue really comes into play here if you're going to take it and get it recycled. And what a lot of these companies do is they take all these recycled parts and they ship them over to China, to Manila, those type of places that do not have the kind of laws in effect for toxic waste. So, you know, there are communities in China, for example, where the average male does not live past 30 simply because they have a landfill full of toxic components from our electronics.
Oh, is that right?
And what they're doing over there is they're melting down these boards for the gold and silver that's in them and other exotic elements like you were talking about. And, of course, because they breathe these fumes, just like you and I were talking about this morning, you know, getting in the water supply is one thing. You know, when these things are around us and you breathe around them, doesn't hurt you a whole lot because there's no vapor or anything coming off of them. But in the water supply, dangerous thing. Well, imagine if you're melting these things. Dangerous
right,
stuff.
Yeah. And so, then it's in the air. That's right.
Yes, yes. So I just kind of want to bring that up. And the reason I'm kind of bringing this up is that if you're going to recycle or if you're going to donate, I think the first thing that I would ask is, what do you do with the parts? You know, so if you're going to drop them off at a box store or something like that, I think it's really important to ask them if they're shipping their parts to third world countries, that type of thing, because you don't want to have them disposed in areas where people, kids are playing in these dump sites and that type of thing because of those type of toxicities. So am I boring you yet?
Well, a good thing you could do with these things is give them to someone like me.
Yes, and that's exactly where I wanted to go. I think repurposing is a wonderful thing. So let's talk a little bit about repurposing, and let's start right with computers. Where do you think and what kind of repurposing can we do with computers?
Well, mainly what I would do with these things is take the parts out of them.
Okay.
But the useful parts. So, for example, a lot of people had these old printers with big parallel printer cables.
Sure.
And the cables are no longer useful because the printer uses USB or some other connection.
Exactly. Now.
And so they've got these cables. And the interesting thing about them is that if you cut the cable open, there's a lot of really good quality wire that you can use. And it's this wire, each strand, you can go down to Radio Shack and pay money for this. And in an old printer cable, you get more than you could possibly use.
Absolutely. So, okay. And what about like computers? Now, you and I talk a lot about other operating systems like Linux and Unix and that type of thing. Linux has some great operating systems nowadays, and if you were to take an old computer, if you wanted to repurpose it for something, you know, a media server, you know, some type of database, something, even something to run maybe some other electronics, you know, or whatever in your house, you know, you could repurpose those particular devices and put an operating system like Linux on there, which would actually make the thing run pretty well again.
Yeah, in fact, in my basement, I have an old computer, an old desktop computer that I don't want to haul around, so I just put it in the basement, and all it has on it is MP3s, and it's hooked up to a speaker, so whenever I'm working in the basement, I just have music playing.
So you're actually using your old computer
as a stereo.
See, that's a great way to repurpose these things, and I think a person can get really creative about repurposing them. I've never even thought about using one as a stereo before. Yeah. That's a great idea. So
And I have Linux on it, so when I boot it up, it boots up in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a long, drawn-out process. Yeah. So it's like turning on a stereo.
You know, and let's just get into – and, in fact, I guess we got to go to a break here. After the break, Jim, there's your clue – or cue there. We're going to talk about why we're talking about Linux and what you can use Linux for and what it is on those old computers. So come on back, everybody.
You're listening to Supertalk 1270's podcast. Available online at supertalk1270.com.
Facebook.com/TheTechRanch or Twitter at Guru of Geek or at www.thetechranch.com. Here again is your Guru of Geek, Marlo Anderson.
Welcome back to the Tech Ranch, everybody. Our in-studio guest is physicist Terry Pilling, and we were just talking about repurposing old computers, and we were kind of throwing out Linux a little bit. I actually pronounce it Linux sometimes, and you may have heard of it that way too, but why don't you explain to everybody what Linux is?
Well, Linux is an operating system for your computer, similar to Windows, except that it's open source, so you can get in there and change anything you like. So if you're like me, you get annoyed by things that don't work the way you want them to when you sit down at your computer. Well, with Linux, you're able to go in and fiddle around with it and tweak it and make it do exactly what you want it to do. And it's also the backbone of the World Wide Web and the Internet. It works as a server base for the Internet.
Okay.
Linux and Unix systems.
And probably the most wonderful, not the most wonderful thing, but the thing that I like about using Linux on older PCs is that basically it's free.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, if you want to make a donation to the developers of Linux, you can absolutely do that, but you can just put it on any machine you want. I've actually used Linux on many of the current netbooks. You know, you'll buy it with Windows 7 or whatever on there. And I like to use Linux Mint on those because the machine runs unbelievably fast. And you can do a dual boot type of situation. So you can leave Windows 7 on there but also have Linux on there at the same time. And it's just wonderful.
Well, my computer has a version of Linux called Arch Linux on it.
Okay.
And another great thing about Linux is all the software is free also.
Yes.
So you just go to the internet, press a button, and it downloads the software just like your phone does with Android.
Yes. I absolutely love all the features in Linux. And again, everything is based on, you know, we talk about being free. But if you like it and you want to make a donation to the people who develop it, that's why they develop these things, is because they would expect that some people might like it so much that they'll pay them a couple dollars. That's why it all works so well. So anyway, you had also talked about one other reason during the break that we can repurpose our old computers, and I thought this was fascinating too, so why don't you share that with everybody? The remote home idea.
Well, one thing that you couldn't do if you set it up with a Linux server is incorporate it with another little device that I call an Arduino.
I knew you were going to work that in there somewhere, Jared. Yeah.
Well, you can set it up so that it controls your house. And
okay.
So then when you're on vacation somewhere, you can log into your computer remotely and check on how things are going at your house, turn the lights on and off and do various things and effectively make it look like you're still there.
So you would have like modules that you'd plug into your, you know, lights, for example.
Well, a computer is a microcontroller, basically.
Okay.
It controls things It has input and output, and you can use that output to control various devices around your house, anything that runs on electricity.
Okay. Interesting. Now, I know you're waiting for me to move into the cell phone arena here, so...
Well, my problem...
Anything else on computers before we do that?
No.
Okay. And again, before, you know, we're going to move away from computers here as far as how to repurpose them or how to recycle them. Please, if you're going to recycle a computer... work with a company who recycles them in such a way that they're not being shipped to third world countries. I just can't emphasize that enough because I think it's great for the safety of our world population that we don't have all these elements in landfills that are not being regulated like they are in the United States. So anyway, let's move on to my favorite topic, repurposing droids. So what is your issue, Terry?
Well, I have 5 cell phones at home.
Okay.
And they all work, but I don't have... a subscription for them anymore, so
okay.
I don't use them as phones. The one I do have, I use, but
okay.
What do I do with these old ones?
Yep. It is really becoming a problem. I think everybody probably has one or two of them around there. And, you know, I think the first thing you can do is, and I know this is hard to believe for a lot of people, but old phones still have value. You know, if you were to actually hop onto eBay, or Craigslist or whatever, you'd be surprised, actually, if you throw it up there. You might get $20, $30, $50 for that old phone. So that's the first thing I would do. I was just looking at some statistics, as a matter of fact. There were 1.3 million phones sold in the United States last year that have been used before. There's actually a fairly large market for old phones. So that's the first thing that I would do. The second thing I would do is, cell phones for soldiers, any of those type of programs are great programs that you can just donate your phone to, and then they will take and they will give those phones to our soldiers or maybe to domestic violence centers, those type of situations where, the phone actually still works just fine. It's just that, like you said, you don't have a plan for it anymore and you've upgraded to a newer phone. So those type of situations are out there. I would certainly look at, if it's just a phone, just finding a place to either sell it or donate it. And nowadays, it's always nice that you can sell it and make a couple extra bucks.
Yeah, definitely.
So now, a smartphone on the other side, if it's a Droid or whatever, there are many, many things that you can do with it. I've actually have a couple of old Droids already. I'm actually on my third or fourth smartphone that is an Android. And I use it. I still have all three of my old Droids. One of them I use as a VoIP phone at the house. So you can repurpose it so that if you're in a Wi-Fi area, that you can actually just make and receive free phone calls. So there's one thing you can do with your phone.
That's neat.
And just to give you a little story, I guess, my grandson Logan loves to play with phones. And he, of course, loves to call his grandpa. So I actually set up a VoIP phone for him. And he actually got it set up so that he can just touch the button on his touchpad screen right there, and it makes a phone call right to me. And he'll call and leave me 28 messages saying he wants ice cream. So it's pretty hilarious, actually. But at least it gives him that opportunity to call me when he wants to. And it's just a VoIP phone, and it's repurposed and something that he likes to do. Of course, he plays Angry Birds on it and that type of thing, too. So there's one thing you can do. Another thing that I like to do with old Droids is make them into credit card machines. Like with a Square device or what have you. You see a lot of these now in many shows and that type of thing that you would attend, where they swipe the card right through the cell phone. Well, you can actually repurpose it to make it into basically a credit card device that you could use in restaurants or whatever. So I think you're going to see more and more of that, and it's just a great way to repurpose those devices. And I know you like to hack into these a little bit too, so what ways can you think that you'd repurpose it?
If I had some old Android phones,
okay.
I'm not sure how to do it with any of the other kind, but
okay.
Android is an open source operating system.
Right.
And so I would hack into it and then use these phones for remote controls and other types of things.
Okay.
Along with Arduinos.
And, a remote control. you're going to force us into talking about Arduinos pretty shortly here. A remote control is an interesting idea, actually. Most Droids can be repurposed to become an actual remote control for your television or what have you as well. So that's a great idea, actually, with some very advanced functionality if you want it to be that
way.
And
you can also use it to develop your own Android applications.
Right.
So, for example, if you went onto the internet to the developer.android.com site.
Okay.
It teaches you how to make your own Android apps, like Angry Birds, for example.
Sure.
Someone made that.
Yep.
And probably made millions of dollars, off of this program. And someone just sat down and wrote it. So you can learn how to do that, and then you can take your old Android phone and put these things on there to test them.
Sure, sure. So there's a lot of great creative ways that you can repurpose your phones. Basically any of the apps that you are using now on your phone can still be used in a Wi-Fi type of situation, at your home or office or whatever, using your old devices. So there may be some things, you could use it as a GPS device, for example. You could have your own, if you wanted to take the whole family out geocaching sometime, you could actually use your old devices for that. Another thing, too, and not a bad idea, actually, is to throw, and this is your old phones, by the way, and I would charge them occasionally and then throw them in the glove compartment of your car. Because if you ever have an emergency, let's say you get caught in a blizzard someplace or whatever, you may not actually, you know, what happens if your regular cell phone dies or whatever, you would actually have a backup in a glove compartment or something in your car. So I think that's always a good thing, too.
And the 911 services work.
Even always works. That's correct. They always work. So you can also use an old phone as a webcam or a remote camera. So if you wanted to set up something, for example, for your baby or something along those lines, you could actually set that up as a remote camera and use it as a baby monitor and actually monitor from your cell phone or your computer that way. So that would be an interesting way to use it as well. I'm just going through my list here. They're talking about a mobile mouse. You can use your old Android smartphone and even an iPhone as a mobile mouse, wireless, remote, keyboard, and trackpad. And you literally, this is the advanced functionality of remote control, for example. If you are on your internet-connected television or through your Blu-ray or whatever, and you know how it is when you have to, like, do a search for something, you got to take the remote control and move to A to B to C. You could actually, in your remote control that you've created on your Android, just touch those, and it would appear on the screen as well. So I'm just throwing some other ways to do that. And, of course, I think the coolest thing is to repurpose an old cell phone into a remote car starter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there you go. So those are some ideas we have for repurposing old droids, everybody. And after the break, we will continue our discussion with physicist Terry Pilling. Come on back, everybody.
You're listening to Supertalk 1270's podcast, available online at supertalk1270.com.
Stream this program now at supertalk1270.com. Here is your guru of geek, Marlo Anderson.
Welcome back to the Tech Ranch, everybody. Our in-studio guest, again, is physicist Terry Pilling, and we were just talking about recycling droids and that type of thing. I was going over my Facebook comments over the break here. And people chiming in from all over the country stating that they have, in fact, been checking themselves on that they use, I'm just reading the stuff here, making sure that they're recycling with ecologically minded companies. So just make sure, again, that if you're recycling electronics, that you work with somebody that makes that so that they do not get into improper landfills across the country. So anyway, with that said, thanks, everybody, for listening across the country. Terry, we were just talking about any other comments on recycling old phones. Putting you on the spot here. You're shaking. You're on radio. You can't shake your head here. You have to say no. So...
No, I think you covered it, Marlo.
Okay. Well, I know you're excited to get into... you did make one comment, though, in the break about Linux and why you... Another reason you like Linux so much.
Oh, yeah. Well, another reason I like Linux is that it's crowdsourced in the sense that being open source means you can change things, as we mentioned earlier. But that also means that if there's a problem with the operating system, people go in and they fix it, and then they put the fix up on the web so that the very next day there's an upgrade. And it upgrades your system, and your system gets fixed as well. So you don't have to wait for the next release to come out. It's being fixed constantly.
Right.
Which is nice.
Yes. All right. You've dropped the word Arduino a couple times during the show already. So I'm thinking a few people want to know, what in the world is an Arduino?
Well, it's an electronic microcontroller intended for hobbyists and artists.
Okay.
And basically, it's a very easy to use sort of way of learning electronics and controlling things with electronics. So if you do a Google search on Arduinos, that's Arduino, I think. Arduino.
Okay, take your word for it. We'll look it up later.
In any case, if you Google search it, you'll find so many artists and hobbyists out there making interesting and cool devices out of it.
So why don't you give us an example of maybe something maybe that you've done with an Arduino or something that's that's fascinated you with one?
Well. Sort of as just for fun, I made an Arduino that will play songs. So it's basically what it is. It's a little microcontroller, a computer chip.
Okay.
And it's got some input and output leads that you can plug wires into and hook things up to it.
Okay.
So I hooked up a speaker to it and wrote a little program on my computer. And then you upload the program onto the Arduino, and there's a computer program that you use to do this.
And it just by a USB port, correct?
Yeah. Yep. You plug it into the computer and put the program on there, and the program was to play the national anthem.
Okay.
So then out of this little speaker, it plays the national anthem. And that's just a simple example, but people have used these things to build little robots and, robot wars where the robots fight each other.
Yes.
These things are controlled at their heart. Their brain is a microcontroller, like an Arduino.
So if somebody wanted to get involved with doing this type of thing, you're making it sound fairly simple to do these.
It is very simple. You don't have to know anything about math or computers or programming or anything.
Now, how is that possible?
Well, it's because they've designed the system for artists, not for computer nerds like you and me. And when you design something for artists, it has to be for the non-technically minded, but for the artistic instead. And so what they're trying to encourage is people to come up with very artistic, interesting, creative things to do with these electronics and not to be bogged down in having to learn all the engineering about aspects of it.
So is this expensive?
Oh, no. And that's the best thing about it is you can go online and buy these things from Amazon.com or from wherever you'd like, your favorite place to buy things, eBay, whatnot. They're less than $20.
You're kidding me.
No.
So basically, you have an Arduino that you can program, does it come like a kit?
Well, you can buy kits that come with a bunch of little external devices. For example, a robot. You can buy a robot kit that's based on an Arduino, and it'll be a little remote control robot, and things like that. If you go online, you'll find thousands of different. In fact, the best place to go to see what people can do with Arduinos is one of my favorite internet websites called Instructables.com.
You and I have talked about this website before, so why don't you go ahead with Instructables, and then we'll weave that into Arduinos a little bit.
Instructables.com is the perfect place for a guy like me and probably many of your listeners. It's not professionals. It's people like you and I. And you go to this site, and basically you write an Instructable. So I have an account on this site, and what I'll do is for example, a couple of years ago, I built a bird cage for my birds. I've got a parrot at home, two parrots at home. And I built this stand-up walk-in bird cage. But as I was building it, I was taking pictures at each stage. Okay, I'm going to put the chicken wire on, okay, and take a picture. I'm going to, put the wood, nail the wood together. And I took pictures all the way along of how to build this thing. And ostensibly, I did it back then for myself. So if I ever had to build one again, I'd know how to do it. But what Instructables.com is intended for is now I take all those pictures and I go on and I write a little article, including the pictures, on step by step. Here's how you make a birdcage. Well, there's thousands and thousands of people with many ideas, and they all have Instructables on there on how to do these things, and they're fascinating. There's a whole group on Arduino electronics, but there's also groups on, for example, you can find out how to cook a roadkill snake.
I'm literally on the site right now. Most popular things. How to make a pop-up Christmas tree. How to flash any Verizon phone. How to curl your hair with a flat iron. I mean, we're talking about unbelievable diversity on this thing. And make a center finder, which I have I bet that's okay. Yep.
Several months ago, I made some croissants. You know, croissants?
Yes.
And they're very difficult to make. I didn't realize how hard they were. But there's an Instructable on it, and I followed it step by step, and they were the best croissants I ever ate.
So is there a fee to be on this website?
Is there a way?
A fee. They charge for this?
No, it's free. It's completely free.
Really?
Everything is free, but if you want smooth flowing experience, I think there's a certain minimal fee you can pay, and then you don't have any advertising.
I see.
And you can also then download entire PDF files of the Instructable.
If you go to the paid premium version of it.
Right.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's you can still get all the information.
I see. Instructables.com. That's Instructables. This is absolutely fascinating. Okay, so with Instructables and Arduinos, so if you wanted to build a robot, or if you wanted to build...
Go to Instructables, to the Arduino section.
Okay.
And you'll find someone has done it, and they've written up an instruction manual on how to do it, including all the components you'd need to purchase, where to get them. And then at the end, you'll have one that looks exactly like the one he's got, or he or she has.
So what's the most unique thing that you've seen built with an Arduino?
Oh, gee, that's really hard to say.
I love putting you on the spot
artists
here.
Artists do such creative things with these... You'll be amazed. Every time I go to any site that deals with people creating things with Arduinos, I'm surprised by the cool things they come up with.
Okay.
Did you want to talk about other sites like this?
Yeah,
like, for example,
let's go ahead and keep moving.
Another site that's similar to Instructables but is for more professionals is called Innocentive.
Okay.
And that's Innocentive.com, Innocentive.com.
Okay.
If you're a very creative-minded person, like an engineer or a chemist or something like that, you can make a lot of money going to Innocentive and signing up to solve these problems.
So give the listeners a basic idea about what a company would use Innocentive
right.
for.
Well, that's the purpose of it. The purpose of it is if you have a company and you've run into a problem that you can't solve, and you think I know there must be a way to solve this, but I can't figure out for the life of me how to do it.
Okay.
Then you'd go to Innocentive and you'd present a challenge to them, and you'd write up your challenge saying, "We need a type of sugar that tastes just like sugar and doesn't get you fat, or something like that."
Okay.
Or a type of coffee that gives you the stimulative effect of coffee, but doesn't have any downside to it.
Okay.
Et cetera. You'd go there, you'd put up a challenge, and you'd put up an amount of money that you'll pay for someone to solve it. And then this is called crowdsourcing. Everywhere around the world, there's people that, like myself, who are part of this Innocentive, who've signed up to be problem solvers, and we'll go to work at home trying to figure out a solution to it. And if we do manage to solve it, we'll post the solution on there. And if you decide that that's what you wanted as a solution, then you pay me the amount that you've put up as your prize money for the challenge.
Very interesting.
And these prize monies go from tens of thousands of dollars up to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I was looking at some of them. There's actually some things in here that you could do very, very well with. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have an example of one that I tried.
Well, let's do this then. If you're going to go on to example, let's go to a break, and then we'll continue after the break with the example that Terry has on using Innocentive. So come on back, everybody.
Catch this and other podcasts of Supertalk 1270 online at supertalk1270.com.
Post your comments or questions at thetechranch.com. Let's head back to the studio and join the conversation.
All right, our conversation is with physicist Terry Pilling, and we were just talking about Innocentive. Thank you. I need to look at that a little bit more. Okay, so you're going to give us a live example of what Innocentive would do for you.
Well, I'll just give you an example of one that I tried and failed.
Okay, very good.
I've never actually been able to solve any of them. They're very complicated. But if I did solve one, you get a lot of money for solving it,
sure.
So it's worth it to take your time. But anyway, I couldn't solve this one. What it was it was a military contractor that had set up an Innocentive, and the military contractor had a problem that he wanted solved. And basically what happens if in the military, as many of your listeners know, is that a lot of times they rappel out of helicopters using these big, thick ropes.
Okay.
And they have to get out of that helicopter and on the ground very, very quickly. So they slide out get out the door and slide down very quickly. And, of course, you can imagine the rope burn
sure.
that goes on when you do that. Well, so what this contractor wanted, the Innocentive challenge, was either a new type of glove or a type of apparatus that they could quickly hook to the rope and then unhook at the bottom that would prevent their gloves from being destroyed by the rope burn. And they also had to be able to get to the ground in a certain very short amount of time. It's almost free fall, actually. So anyway, I tried to solve this by coming up with little clamp devices and things like that, but nothing. I couldn't get anything to work. And someone did eventually win that contest, and if you'd like, you could go on to Innocentive, look up that thing, and find out who won. And
well, I actually, very interesting idea. Actually, I had a gentleman on here not too long ago that had developed basically the world's most slippery surface from a plant.
Right?
And you can actually attach just the fabrics to metals, whatever. So as you're telling me this, I'm thinking, wow, why couldn't you just put this on your gloves and then just boom?
Sure. But you wouldn't want to be at total free fall because at the very end of the rope,
you need to be able to grab it. That's true. Okay. A great example. Great example of Innocentive. And I'm just looking at the thing here, and this isn't something that just physicists would do. I mean, if you're a professional in anything,
yeah,
basically,
healthcare, anything.
This is very, very interesting. So I would highly recommend going to Innocentive.com and just seeing. You might come up with an idea and get paid a couple bucks for it. So
click on the one for problem solvers, because then it tells you all the open challenges.
Yes. Okay. And all right.
Don't forget Instructables. That's
Instructables as well. All right. And you wanted to move on to a couple other websites before we run out of time.
One of my favorite websites for news, and I'm sure this will be your favorite website for news.
Yeah, since I didn't even know about it before.
Is Slashdot.
Yes.
Slashdot.org.
Okay.
It's sort of tech news. And the way it works is that people like you and I put our favorite stories of the day onto it, and then they get voted up or down by other users.
Okay.
And the way I use it is I have them send me an email notification every day of the top stories. And these are the stories that thousands of users have already voted up. So it gets rid of all the stories no one wants to hear. And
sure.
You get the most important things every morning. And I love reading that every
morning. Okay. And that's slashdot.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as far as me being a physicist, there's a site that all scientists use now. Not
okay.
just physicists. It was invented by physicists, but I think all scientists use it now.
Okay.
At least a lot of physical scientists and mathematical scientists. And it's called archive.org. That's ARXIV.org. Now, this is for very technical-minded people. If you go on there, you'll see the latest papers and publications in various fields of science. So, for example, I do high-energy theoretical physics and black hole research. And if you go on there and if you search for my name, you'll see my papers on that subject. You can download them and read them. And they're mathematical papers at the cutting edge of physics research. And there's other kinds of things like chemistry and biology and all these other sciences, and you can read the latest publications on that site.
Okay.
If you don't have time to explore the thousands of papers per day that get put on that site from around the world, it's not just an American site, it's worldwide, all the research is going on this site. There's another site called archiveblog.com. That's ARXIVBLOG.com. And what these people do is they find some of the more interesting scientific publications of the day, and they send out an email to people like me who have subscribed to it, telling us these are interesting papers. You might want to check them out. And so an example of that that from yesterday is a paper was written that I was notified about. It's on archive.org, but I was notified through archiveblog.com. And it's a paper where they showed how they're using Twitter to monitor disease epidemics.
This is fascinating. I think this is a great way to we're going to dwell on Twitter just a little bit here at the end of the show here. So explain to – this is fascinating. Just go ahead.
Okay. Well, what they do basically is how Twitter, how it started. In fact, I was telling you earlier that when they first discovered – or they first came up with Twitter, and I think I saw it on some – talk show or whatever on TV. I thought, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Even a year ago, I was still saying the same thing. So.
I thought, this is just text messaging on your phone, and why would anyone care what someone else text messages?
Yes.
But it turns out that there are useful things that can be done with this.
Absolutely.
I think most of the traffic is probably, whatever, I stubbed my toe on the way out the door today.
Yep.
But some of the traffic may sound useless, but it is not. For example, someone might tweet, oh, I have the sniffles today.
Yep.
And the interesting thing is these tweets are public, and where they're coming from is public. So scientists can have computers analyze these tweets. They don't, of course, read them all themselves, but a computer can read these for keywords, can compile these keywords and the locations, and they can find, okay, everyone who's talking about having sniffles today or a cough today or the flu or something, and they can make a pattern. Geographical pattern, they can see the spread of a disease outbreak. And by disease, I don't mean something terrible. It could just be the common cold.
Sure.
But it's interesting. You can watch this outbreak spread and then study it and actually figure out how to perhaps stop it. And so if something very serious comes out, an outbreak of something serious, we'd have a very good handle on how to control it.
So is there some place on the web that you can actually see this?
Yeah. Well, actually, what you should do, you can go to archive.org and find that paper. I'm not really – I don't have it on my fingertips.
Okay.
There's a website associated with it as well. And I'm not sure if there's a live in the paper there's pictures showing the maps of the disease outbreak, but I'm not sure if they have a live simulation of it.
Well, Google does something similar. I don't know if you knew this or not, but they almost to the – basically the same idea, but when you're doing search – parameters, you'll type in, how to, cure my, sniffles or whatever, and they can do the same type of thing, and they have a map that they do this with as well, so they can, it'd be very interesting to put the two of those together, from Twitter and Google, and I bet you really could get some very, very interesting statistics by doing that.
Yeah, or you could even make yourself an Android app and put it on Google Play.
Track diseases.
Yeah, charge 99 cents
there you
a
go.
Download.
There you go. Bring all this information together. So do you have any other websites that you wanted to share with us?
Well, those are the ones that I use on a daily basis. But, you know, just for fun, in case there are one or two listeners out there who are interested in electronics.
And fun. That's right.
There is a site called www.learningelectronics.net.
Okay.
And it has tutorials on how to learn how to do electronics. And there's another site to go with this called smartsim.org.uk. It's smart, S-I-M. .org.uk. And on that is a free Java program you can download to your computer, which is electronics simulator.
Okay.
It's based on SPICE. And so what you can do is you can design your own electronics devices on it and see if they work. And then if they do, then you can go get your wires and your soldering iron and make them. And
just for fun. That's right. And just so everybody knows, we will be blogging about these later on, so you don't have to pull over and write all these things down. We will actually be posting those up a little bit later on. So anything else, Terry? You must have other sites.
Oh, yeah, I have hundreds of them.
Well, keep going. We got a couple minutes left here. So perfect. So I can throw a quick one out there, too. I guess sure. I'm going through my list right now here, too. You know, we always have these little challenges at the end, but I'm not going to be as, scientific as you are, but I found this one website called BeFunky, B-E-F-U-N-K-Y, and it's you're going to laugh at this thing, but it actually turns your images into cartoonized paintings and videos. So you can actually put a video up there or your photo up there, and it'll actually make a cartoon of it. So I'm just throwing that out there as you're looking for your next website you wanted to talk about. So,
well, I think that all I had written down here was instructables.com again, because there was this with the electronics. If you go to those other two sites, learningelectronics.net and smartsim.org, and you come up with some new interesting idea, I encourage you to put an instructable on there, for instructables.com.
Oh, okay.
So that me and Marlo can go and make
it
ourselves.
So, and in order to do that, do they actually have a format that you can follow?
Oh, yeah. It's easy as there's basically, what do you call them, where there's boxes you type in and things
okay.
like that.
Okay.
And click on here and find a picture, and it'll put it in there for
okay.
you.
Okay.
You don't
okay.
have to be an expert.
So as you're doing something like building a fly or for fly fishing or whatever, you know, you can actually do these things and document them
yeah.
and then put them right up on instructables.com.
Or a transporter like the movie The Fly.
Yes, that would be great. A transport would be great. Thanks, everybody, for being on listening to us today. And physicist Terry Pilling, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Mark.
Yeah, it's been a great show today. Come on back next week, everybody.
You've been listening to The Tech Ranch, live and local on Supertalk 1270. Keep ahead of the trends. Tune in every Monday morning at 10 a.m. to The Tech Ranch, exclusively here on Supertalk 1270 and online at supertalk1270.com.
Podcasts of this and other shows are now available on supertalk1270.com.